You're listening to Sweat, Snot and Tears, brought to you by Netmums. I'm Annie O'Leary.
And I'm Wendy Gollidge. And together we talk about all of this week's sweaty, snotty and tearful parenting moments.
With guests who are far more interesting than we are. Welcome to Sweat, Snot and Tears this week, you lovely, lovely, lovely lot. I'm not feeling particularly lovely. I think maybe I've got a bit of lockdown blues. Wend, what are you feeling?
Well, I was about to comment, you just started the podcast with the biggest sigh I've ever heard.
Oh, no. I think the whole nation needs a bit of a pick-me-up, do you?
Yeah, it does feel a bit mid-November, not particularly cheery blues, but we have someone lovely who might cheer us up.
Exactly. We can always rely on our guests to cheer us up. This week we are joined by the lovely Tana Ramsey. Welcome, Tana.
Oh, thank you for having me. How are you?
We're okay. Now, I must say, I think you might win the prize for podcast guest with the most children that we've ever had.
I know, it's crazy, isn't it? Five children. I think because there's such a big age gap, it doesn't feel like five. I feel like I'm cheating. It's not like I had the first time when they were so close in age and it was chaos all the time.
So tell us how old they are now.
Meg is 22. Jack and Holly are about to turn 21. Tilly has just turned 19. And Oscar is 19 months.
And so are they all living at home, or have you got some at home and some not? Obviously Oscar's still at home because that would be weird. but the older ones, who's with you and who's not?
Well, it's funny because they all keep coming back. They sort of
move
out for a
bit. Oh, they're like boomerangs as children, aren't they?
I know, but I'm one of those mothers who just loves having them all at home. It's just, that's how I like it, a crazy house. So any excuse, or if ever there's a sort of I'm not feeling great, I'm like, oh, come home, your bedroom's still there.
Like mother hen.
I know, it's terrible, isn't it? Gordon's sort of saying to me, they need to get a little bit independent, sort of start doing, you know, their own thing. And I'm like, yeah, okay, maybe next year.
Yeah, not now.
So we always kick off by asking our guests if there has been any sweat, snot or tears in their house this morning.
Probably all three, actually.
I like an honest answer.
Oh, our house is always noisy, always crazy, always something happening. Oscar's at the climbing phase at the moment, so there's always bumps and tears. Sweat, probably someone will be doing something, going out for a run or something active, hopefully. Snot, actually, that might be the one we didn't have this morning.
That's good. It's my least favourite of the three, actually.
Yeah, I agree.
Now, I know that we have been lucky enough to secure you as a guest this week because you're working with Pampers.
Yes.
To raise awareness of the work they're doing with parents of premature babies. Tell us a bit about your experience of prematurity.
Well, Jack and Holly were born very unexpectedly, 7 weeks early. I woke up it was actually the morning of Millennium Eve. I woke up.
Oh, wow. What a day.
I know. Crazy. I woke up feeling a little bit uncomfortable, slightly naively, not really thinking I was in labour. And then Gordon actually said to me, God, you were so restless last night. He said, you were tossing and turning all night. So as sort of the morning wore on, felt sort of more aches and pains, went to see the doctor, and I was in labour. I think very naively, I was very young when I had them. I was 25 when I had the twins, and had just sort of cruised through my first pregnancy with Megan. So as you do when you're young, you don't sort of listen to every ache and pain the way you do when you're pregnant when you're 45.
Yeah.
So I went into labour and it wasn't going to stop. So they were delivered that evening, which, you know, I think more than anything, it's the shock that you're happily pregnant, sort of bumping along nicely. Then suddenly you go in the same day to having your baby, and the baby is very swiftly taken away into intensive care, and you're suddenly thrown into this world that is so alarming, and you feel you have no control over. And from sort of safely having a baby in your tummy, suddenly you feel useless. And in a way, bizarrely, your emotions are so heightened because you feel slightly guilty. What did I do? Why has this happened? Mm. You know, it's fantastic. I'm so excited to be working working with Pampers and Bliss, because it's a subject that I even now feel so emotional about, especially with the complication of the pandemic, of parents not being able to go in there and feel that they can learn how to take care of their baby. You have to stand to one side, and to not even be by the side of that incubator must just be so emotional.
Well, yeah, because it's hard enough when they're in an incubator and you can be next to them, isn't it?
Yes, yes. I mean, certainly in my experience, I was encouraged to, everything from breastfeeding, which was something I was so keen to do. When you have a baby early, it's quite a struggle, or certainly I found breastfeeding, and you want your milk to come in, you have to hold the baby, all those things that when you have a full-term baby, you're told to do. So suddenly when you're in an intensive care unit and you're having to pump and just all these things that suddenly you take for granted will come naturally, it's all so hard. So, you know, certainly when I started talking with Pampers and I heard, you know, about the tiny premature nappies that they're doing, and certainly the partnership with VCreate for the screens to be able to at least watch the babies. I mean, it's what a great idea. What an incredible initiative during these hard times.
So tell us a bit about what happened with the twins. How little were they when they were born, and how long were they in special care and things?
They were, Jack was £4.5, Holly was £4.7. They were born at 33 weeks. They were in intensive care for 7 days, and then they were in special care for a further 2 weeks. Jack was diagnosed with a hole in his heart, so he sort of needed slightly more monitoring.
Wow, I had no idea.
Well, and you know, it's all these things that when you actually speak to people, apparently a hole in the heart, to me, that sounded like the most traumatic thing ever. It really did. But the staff were so calming, and it was something that corrected itself. There was no need for surgery or anything like that. But within the first year with medication, it corrects itself. And you're just clinging on to the staff who are suddenly these angels that are looking after your most precious thing and teaching you how to sort of hold a little hand, or you can put your hand through one of the holes in the side of the incubators. All these things that just help you bond and help your emotions, because you are all over the place.
Yes, so one of my daughter was born slightly prematurely, but it turned out she was born with pneumonia. So I have a bit of experience of it too. And I remember vividly actually watching the baby in the next incubator to her, because the whole time Flo was there, he never had a visit from anyone. And it turned out that it was because he had parents who had 5 other children. They lived on the other side of London and they just couldn't be there. And I found that so traumatic to witness. I think that's part of it, isn't it? It's not just that your baby is experiencing all of these things and you're worried for your baby. You're seeing awful things, aren't you? You're seeing other people in distress, other babies in distress, other parents in distress. It's quite overwhelming, or at least I found it to be that way. Did you?
Well, you're in this bubble and you see other babies, but everyone tries to give each other privacy, but you can't help but notice what is going on, or wonder, or, you know, the awful situation when you go in and the baby has gone from opposite. You don't want to ask, but you're all in this really intense situation. And it's heartbreaking. It really is.
It really is. And I think that's why it's so impressive what Pampers are doing with this technology that allows family members to see the baby on a screen, aren't they? Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yes, I mean, if you have other children, you're also leaving behind at home, yes. I don't know, a 2-year-old, a 3-year-old, another sibling, because the risk of infection is so great for these babies that in normal circumstances, only usually one parent, two parents, if you're lucky, are allowed in. So with Pampers and VCreate and Bliss, what they're doing is that they're actually being able to have screens up so you can watch the baby from home to help feel close, to help the other parent maybe, because that's one of the things that is so pressurized, is trying to keep your family together, trying to include everybody. You're torn in two. You want to be at home trying to keep everything normal and reassure everyone, but you want to be with your baby in that unit. So to be able to actually include people or other family members on a camera to feel inclusive, I think that's what is so important and is helping to be created by Pampers. So, you know, to help share stories, especially on social media, we're using the hashtag, hashtag Pampers for Preemies. And each time that hashtag is used, it's triggering a donation for the premature baby nappies and for these screens with VCreate for dongles and iPads. So we're just getting as much awareness as we can, because the nappies themselves as well, I remember when Jack and Holly were born, they were laid literally on a tiny baby nappy, but it wasn't sort of premature nappy as such. These nappies can fit babies at 1.8 pounds, which, wow. I mean, if you see these nappies, they are just minuscule. But they're very cleverly designed, because the other thing with premature babies is the skin is so delicate, and this helps lock away the moisture, helping to protect the skin. It's got tags on at sort of all angles, because the babies have so many wires attached as well, just to make everything that little bit easier, that little bit more comfortable. And Bliss, of course, is the largest premature baby charity. Yes. This is such a tough time anyway, emotionally, mentally, and I can only just imagine what it must be like at this time. Having a baby itself and going through birth on your own is traumatic, but to then have your baby taken away and not be able to feel that you're part of that bonding, that those first few hours, those first few weeks, mm-hmm. is heartbreaking.
It's really tough.
So at what stage did you feel like you'd moved past the twins' prematurity? Or is it something that's always kind of stayed with you in some way, even now they're big and grown up and eating you out of house and home?
Well, it's interesting because, you know, emotionally, when you're a mum, I mean, everybody is different, but for a long time, I felt guilty that I'd had them early. I tend to look back and sort of, you almost beat yourself up over certain things. Should I have done this? Should I have done that? And with Jack and Holly, I was lucky enough that I somehow managed to pump and continue breastfeeding until they were 8 months. So I really felt that I was sort of trying to do my best to give them the best. Mm-hmm. And I think that helped me an awful lot. But that was through trying to have as much sort of skin-to-skin contact as possible, which is one of the reasons I really feel for mums at the moment, because it's no easy feat in normal circumstances, let alone this. Mm-hmm. But I think when they started sort of getting those sort of round, fat, chubby babies, then I felt we were doing okay and we were over that. So you move from intensive care into special care, which is a huge step. And I think then, because they're not in an incubator, but they're sort of under supervision, everything gets a little bit easier. But as I say, the guilt, I don't think it ever leaves you, does it? When you think you might have done something wrong as a mum.
I know. And no matter what happens to your child, you always take on the guilt of it, even if it's not really your fault, don't you? Well, I think that's part and parcel of being a parent.
I know. And when I, you know, we had incredible sadness back in 2016 when we lost a baby at 20 weeks pregnant. And, it's unbelievably hard. And, you know, even now I sort of think, had I done this, had I done that, you can't help but feel guilt. And I think that is part of being a mum. And it's how you try and handle that. And I think the important thing is not to put your guilt on anyone else. And it's not that you should feel guilty, it's just the way you handle your emotions. So I think trying to sort of find a way that you can manage it and you can accept is something that is really important, because as a mum, you also need to protect those around you. That's what I like to do. I have amazing support from everybody, but you also like to protect.
Absolutely. That's what I was going to ask next is, so who did you turn to for support? Obviously with the twins being born premature, and then more recently with your awful pregnancy loss, what did you find useful? Who did you find useful to turn to in those situations?
I think one of the things that, you know, I found was so important was just certainly with the other children and with Gordon was just talking, because yeah. I think a lot of focus is put on the mum. But I think I was so aware of how much it affected everybody. It's such an immense shock. And certainly when the twins were born as well, suddenly, you know, we go from having a toddler at home to two premature babies as well. So I think certainly as a couple for us, and, you know, it's different for everybody, but for Gordon and I, it was, Gordon is a great talker, as I'm sure people will laugh at. It's an obvious comment. But
we kind of suspected that.
He doesn't leave any stone unturned. And I think certainly in these circumstances, that was brilliant. You know, it was okay for me to cry, to have a really rubbish day.
I was going to
say,
did that help you open up more?
Yes.
Seeing him talking, yeah.
Well, it did, because I think in comparison, I like to kind of keep things quite private. But I've learnt that actually to talk about it more was more helpful, which is quite surprising, as I say, because naturally I do like to sort of keep things private. But in that circumstance, and also when I had Jack and Holly, hearing other people's stories really, really helped me. And that surprised me. So I made a pact with myself that I would talk about all of this, because all I did was cling on to other people's stories and cling on to the fact that, were your premature babies okay? Are they okay now? You know, what were there any issues you found? Were they delayed in speech or walking or anything like that? And likewise, when we lost Rocky, I was desperate to speak to people that had been through the same situation, and did they go on and have another healthy pregnancy? And the other thing also with me then that was sort of battling against me was I was older, you know. How old were you when you had a baby? All these things. And I think talking is one of the best forms of therapy that I've ever found. So now I open up and I want to talk about it. And, you know, that's why I want people to, when they see that I've partnered with Pampers, I want people to share their stories with me, because I think it really helps. I really found it helped. And yet it didn't come naturally to me.
I admire you hugely for being someone who's willing to talk about this, because A, they are very tricky topics to talk about, and B, as you say, if you're naturally a bit more of a private person, it's probably not your first instinct, but it does help people and it does matter. On NetMums, we actually host the Bliss Forum so that parents of premature and sick babies can come together and talk, and I know that it makes such an absolute difference. I think one of the things about this Pampers campaign isn't just that it's about fundraising, and of course that's important, and we want to be able to donate as many nappies and as many VCreate technologies as possible, but what we also want to do is just to let people know that you're not alone. It's so important, isn't it?
It really is, because there, you know, I remember the night that when I was laying in hospital, no longer pregnant and not having a baby to leave hospital with me, I just remember feeling so, well, it was just the most awful feeling. This baby that you'd felt sort of moving was no longer there, and you had nothing to take home, and actually leaving the hospital and leaving our baby there was just excruciating. It was so hard. And then things happened that I never really realized would happen, like 4 days later or 3 days later, I was in the bath and, you know, your milk starts coming in and you're like, oh my God. But there were things that I had never thought about, but they're things that you can warn people about. And it just, it's nothing to be ashamed of. And I still look back and think, if I'd done this, if I'd done that, would it have been different? And I'm always going to think that. But at the same time, you know, you have to find a way of making peace. But it's okay to have a day, even now, even though I'm so blessed to have a little 19-month-old. It doesn't take away any of the pain of losing a little baby that, you know, would have been here with us now. But it's okay to feel like that. And it's okay to say, I will never get over it, but I will learn to deal with it.
And did it make your pregnancy harder afterwards? Did you find you were just terrified, and every twinge and every jump you were just thinking, oh God, has something gone wrong?
Oh, totally. Totally. I really enjoyed it, and it was straightforward. But I didn't really, we didn't announce it until I was 6.5 months pregnant.
Yes, I remember.
That's right, yeah.
And even at work, I was wearing, you know, big jumpers, and I think one or two people might have twigged, but no one asked me. And I didn't talk about it at all, and neither did Gordon or the children. But when I got to 7 months, then I really loved every second. And I loved it all the way through, but I suppose I trusted it then.
Yeah, you almost lose faith in your own body, don't you, when something goes wrong?
You do. And, you know, but it still felt so special, and so I felt so lucky. But, you know, you just, I think, and funnily enough, it was the last week of pregnancy that I started getting really nervous again, because you're like, oh my gosh, I've got here. But I suppose, I mean, still every day you get worried. You worry every time they sort of go out the room when you haven't got eyes on them. But but then I do that, and Meg's nearly 23, and I still sort of phone her, tell me when you get to the end of the road, tell me this, tell me that. So, you know, it's all part and parcel, I think, of being a mum. And until I lost Rocky, I'd never had a miscarriage. And I suppose, looking back statistically, that was quite rare to have four children and never to have had a fright. You know, I'd had the twins early, but we were okay. So, you know, when you start looking at this, and as I say, just talking, I've learned the value of that. And I could never encourage people enough now just to talk about their situations, because more than anything, we can all help each other. And and that, you know, in this pandemic, I think that is vital. We can talk. Absolutely. You might not be able to meet, but you can talk.
And sometimes you don't even know the value of what you've said. Sometimes it can be the tiniest little nugget or comment, but it can mean the world to someone else who's just been waiting to hear that very thing, can't it?
Totally. Absolutely.
I was going to ask, did it also add to the, I don't know what the word is, add to the awfulness, that you were doing this in the public eye, that you were a well-known family? Would it have made it easier in any way if you'd been unknown?
To be honest, I think the support that it gave us was incredibly helpful. And, you know, it is Gordon's life and therefore my life, because it's, you know, he's my closest person in the world. So I think more than anything, the support and the people reaching out was incredible. And I really needed that.
So having had five babies, which was your best birth, or which was your most horrific birth? Feel free to tell us either.
Yes, we'd like a birth story, Tana.
I've been...
Our producer doesn't necessarily, but we do.
The first time with Megan, I gave birth naturally, and I was in labor, it felt like about 5 weeks, but in fact was about 48 hours. And it just went on and on and on. And but I was 23. I mean, God, thank goodness.
You're supposed to fire them out at 23, surely.
Well, you'd have thought so, wouldn't you? But I made a real meal out of that one. And I remember afterwards being so exhausted and just wanting to have a shower. And it was the middle of the night, and I had this baby in this cot next to me, thinking, well, what do I do with her if I want to go and have a shower? You know, I'm standing on this ward and everyone is looking like they know what they're doing. And I was literally like, oh my goodness, I really haven't got a clue. Second time round, obviously, was Jack and Holly. So they were in intensive care. So, and then Tilly was, she was a cesarean like the twins. So she was probably... Tilly and Oscar were probably the most straightforward, easiest. Jack and Holly was the scariest. Meg's was the most exhausting.
They all have their pluses and minuses, don't they?
They really do. They really do.
So having been through these huge life events, what advice would you give to somebody else now going through either situation? A late pregnancy loss or a premature baby, is talking, is that your number one takeaway?
I think absolutely talking, and just being totally honest about your emotions, because any feeling you have is fine. I think there's so many things you can feel, you can never predict it, and just really, really let people help you. Don't think you're alone. Don't think you're on your own, and just reach out. And I think when you're not feeling okay, you have to have the confidence to talk about that. You know, whether it's you feel you can't bond with your baby, you're not feeling like you think you should be feeling, it's all okay. And just ask for help. I think that's really, really important. And don't be too proud.
And what about advice to friends and family? Because I know you can feel very redundant if you're kind of stood on the wings watching someone go through something like this. What would you tell them to do to help? What's the most important thing that supporters
can
do.
It's so hard, isn't it, to know what you can do?
I know.
I think it's a lot of it is, I mean, I remember my mum and my sister just doing so many practical things for me, whether it was looking after Megan or doing the shopping or cleaning or just things that you really don't want to have to think about. And just also just reaching out, send a message in the morning first thing, just contact, that constant contact, and just doing things that even if it feels like it's behind the scenes is helping. It's that unheard support, I suppose, and just making sure, just keeping in contact. I think a lot of people think, oh, they need some rest, let's give them some space. Some people might want that, but let them tell you that,
yeah, so that people know they're not alone.
Yes, absolutely.
So now we have to ask, we wouldn't be a Net Mums podcast if we didn't ask, is there going to be a baby number 6?
Oh, God, you're so
yes,
naughty.
I've
don't
heard
tempt
you
me.
Say yes, but Gordon say no. So how are we going to resolve this one?
Oh, do you know, I would so love another baby, but I think I'm going to be thinking that when I'm in my 70s. I don't think...
Keep going, Dana.
I know. I don't think I will ever say I'm done. But
see, I could have a baby, but no, I just couldn't have another toddler.
See, I'll do babies, toddlers, but I don't want to be pregnant again. I can't face that.
Do you know the way I feel is when I had the older children, I had 4 babies in 4 years. It was so full on.
That
and
is
I loved
hardcore,
every minute.
Tana. That is
it
really
is,
hard.
But I was also in my 20s. Now having Oscar, although as much as I would love to have another one, I am kind of just totally loving and indulging in this, you know, there's one and it's one car seat, one pram, one this, one that.
True.
And I would really love it, but I also need to thank my lucky stars. I am beyond blessed. The feeling, I think, if I was to say to the other kids, oh, you know, everyone emotionally really went through it when we lost Rocky. And when I was pregnant with Oscar, we all were as worried as each other every step of the way. Every message and phone call, I think they were probably thinking, oh God. So I think everyone's feelings taken into consideration, I think we're just incredibly lucky. And if I was to be really sensible, I would just say, I think we're done. But I never want to say that. but that's what's logical. So I'm going to leave it at that.
You're such a lovely mum, thinking about everybody else's feelings and all of it. It's so lovely to hear. Now, when it comes to around the house, are you good cop and Gordon's bad cop? Or is it the other way around?
Oh, it's the other way around. Ooh. He's got this thing. Okay. There's me thinking we're so super healthy, Oscar, eat all your lentils and this and that and, you know, great diet. I turn around and Gordon's like at the fridge with chocolate buttons and Oscar literally is skipping along the kitchen, almost eyeballing me going, look at what daddy's got. So that's a little snapshot of exactly what goes on in our kitchen.
There's the killer line, chocolate buttons. Now, next question. Got to ask, who is the sweariest? Because you know who we think it is, but are you actually the one F-bombing everybody in the house every 5 minutes?
I couldn't possibly answer that question. I'll leave it up to your imagination.
I can't believe that a bad word would ever leave your mouth, Tana.
Oh, well, there we go. I'm going to leave it at that because I love that fact that you've got that image of me.
I think all the mums are the sweariest. Nationwide.
I think I might agree with you on that one.
Yeah. Imagine if you were married to a chef.
I would like to know who cooks the most, because you're not a bad cook yourself, Mrs. Ramsay, are you? And who cooks Christmas dinner? Is it you or is it Gordon?
Well, actually, Christmas dinner is a bit of everyone. Gordon sort of stands at the edge of the aisle and sort of telling us all
directing
what to do.
Directing everyone.
Actually, the best person for doing a meal like Christmas or Sunday roast is Tilly. She's got it down to a fine art. And I find her really relaxing to be around when she's cooking because she's very organised. She kind of has it as her Sunday afternoon. And yeah, she's the best one. So
Hold on. Does this imply that you don't find your husband relaxing to be around in the kitchen?
It's like someone has sprayed oil over the entire kitchen. There's flames, there's oil, there's mess. There's kind of, can you pass me this? Can you pass me that? Where's this? Where's that? I mean, he's only lived in the house for 20 years.
So might we see Tilly embarking on a cooking career?
No, I think Tilly loves cooking. She's not going to be a chef, no. She just loves it and it's very natural to her. But I think she has other plans.
I'm going to come back a second and ask you about lockdown, Tana, because lockdown with a toddler, man, that's got to be hardcore. And
we felt very relieved that all we've had to do is like teach our kids a bit. A toddler in lockdown must be something else.
Well, I have to strongly disagree with you because I felt sorry for all of you having to do schoolwork.
Pretty horrible, I'll give you that.
Yeah, I mean, that is stress. During the first lockdown, Oscar learned to walk. He was 11 months, just coming up for 12 months when we went into first lockdown. He had everyone home watching him learn to walk. So he thought it was fabulous. It's like,
he must have.
Oh, loved it. Boys are like dogs. They just want feeding and exercise. So as long as I don't mind going out in the rain and wind, we're fine. And I quite like that. So the other thing I found was because I had to shut my business, we're a beauty salon, so yes. I couldn't work. Actually having a toddler, I have found it so helpful to have a routine. I really have. I think I'd have gone nuts if I, you know, we'd just all been floating around, not able to do anything. To have a child that keeps you in that routine and you have your time when they're having a nap to do whatever bits of work you need to do, I think has just given us a structure, which I found really helpful.
But you also have an extra magic trick up your sleeve. You're a trained Montessori teacher, aren't you? So you must know all the tricks of the trade when it comes to keeping a toddler occupied.
Well, I know it's different when they're your own, though, isn't it?
Oh, really?
I think so. But he's just at that stage where give him a saucepan, a wooden spoon or a whisk and bits of tissue. He loves it. His favourite thing at the moment is the Hoover. So
of course.
I think he's at quite an easy stage. Or maybe it's the fact that it's just one of them.
I've got to tell you, if you'd have come to me with a toddler, that the word easy would not have come out of my mouth in any way, shape or form. Sorry, my darling daughters, but it would not. Before we go, we have a couple of questions that we always ask our guests. The first one is quite a poignant one for you guys. I would like to know, what's for tea tonight, please?
Well, tonight I do this. I got it from Joe Wicks, Wean in 15. It's
We love Joe.
Oh, I love Joe Wicks. It's a vegetable and chickpea curry, which is really nice. It's very, when I say curry, it's not spicy, but it's all your leftover veg with some lentils and some chickpeas and tomatoes and coconut milk.
Yummy.
I usually do a batch of that. It's great to freeze as well. And I'm doing it for Oscar with some salmon tonight.
Very nice.
You put me to shame.
I'd quite like to be coming to your house for tea. And then our other question, some people love it, some people loathe it. Imagine you're tucking Wendy and I into bed tonight.
Yes, it's weird, we know.
And sing us your family lullaby, because you know everyone has a song in their back pocket that they sing when the kids can't get to sleep.
I do, and it's one that I used to sing to all of the other children as well. And I don't know where it came from. I think it might have been from like a Jack and Ori story on CBeebies when they were little or something. I have got the most terrible singing voice, so I don't know whether it's going to send you to sleep. Am I going to really sing to you?
Yes.
Oh, God. I'm going to cringe. Okay. Please don't laugh. You got to go to sleep.
We're straight faced.
So it's... The time has come to say good night, to say sleep tight till the morning light. The time has come to say good night at the end of a lovely day. We've had so much fun today, tomorrow's just a dream away. And now it's time to say good night at the end of a lovely day. Have you ever heard anything so out of tune? I think because I was nervous,
something?
It was worse than usual.
We've recorded a whole series of this, and no offence to any of our other guests, but I think you win.
Oh.
I think you win Best Lullaby.
And do you know the really weird thing? It's that's what we sing in our house as well.
Is it?
It is. It was like the bedtime song on CBeebies.
It was,
something.
Wasn't it?
Yeah. My singing is horrific, so I might just play my kids you singing it from now on.
But the words are so lovely, aren't they? They kind of say everything about the day you hope they've had.
Do you know we've had many singers on this podcast who wouldn't sing us their lullaby, Tana? So fair play. You win, thank you.
But you know, when you have kids, you don't really care how ridiculous you sound. And that's the other thing I think about being an older parent, is you just don't care.
Yeah, you don't care.
You just do what you think is right. And whereas before I would have kind of, if anyone had told me I was doing something wrong, I'd have been mortified. And now I think, well, do you know what? It works for me.
Now, Tana, can I just say a huge thank you? You've been an absolutely fabulous, honest, real, entertaining, awareness-raising guest. I feel very honoured that we had you to talk to us today. Thank you.
Oh, well, I've really enjoyed it. Thank you to you both, and thank you for having me.
Can we come to Harry, please?
Yeah.
It's lovely to meet you.
And you.
Really lovely to meet you.
And both stay safe and lots of love
yes,
to all your
and
families.
And you. And give Oscar a big squeeze from us.
Will do. Thank you.
Take care, Tana.
Thanks.
Bye. Bye-bye.
Bye.